folks, I'm John Meehan, and this is Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related that I literally record to and from work as a high school instructional coach just outside of Washington, D.C. Each week we do about 10 to 11 minutes of brain dump, and we put it here on the podcast to sort of take apart. You can think of it like an auditory version of a blog and the invite to a conversation, because I'd love to talk to you about this week's topic and every topic. Feel free to tweet at me. I'm on Twitter at MeehanEDU. The goal of these conversations is really to get a dialogue going about these topics, how we use these ideas in our classroom, how we pull in examples of the same, and I keep these conversations short, these podcasts, about 10 minutes, so that you can take this bite-sized idea and use it as like a guiding principle or a thing you can think about as you enter your classroom today. Try to make use of it like by the end of the week. So today, and in this podcast, I'm talking all about story. And I'm really excited about the power of story and how stories have the ability to do incredible things in our classrooms. I think this is a thing that's relevant to teachers of all grade levels, all ages. Certainly if you're in the humanities classes, it's really easy because so much of your content already has stories baked into it. Whether it's the story of, you know, Huckleberry Finn making his way down the Mississippi River, or the story of Alexander Hamilton and the fateful duel against Aaron Burr, or the story of Moses lost in the wilderness trying to find his way through the desert and lead the people back to the promised land. These are the sorts of stories that, I mean, there's already so much there that we can kind of tap into, and that's wonderful. Because in our classrooms, telling stories is how people learn. There's so much research to suggest that just simply processing numbers and data can be overwhelming. But even if people lose little pieces or details of your story, they are able to sort of hang their understanding on that broader schema, and they lean in with interest, and different sectors of their brain light up, because while you're telling them a story about your thing, immediately they're lighting up all those sensors in their brain about all the other things that they know that kind of relate to that thing. So taking Huck Finn, for example, Huckleberry Finn is a story of an adventure of a young boy down the Mississippi River. He has an abusive father, and he has a runaway slave with him, and he's trying to find his way to freedom. So he thinks by sailing south down the Mississippi, which is not the best way to go in the slavery times in the United States, he decides to head south in order to catch a river north. He misses that river north, and then he finds himself in deep, deep trouble down in the deep, deep south. Now, maybe none of us have ever had a slave, thank God, right? And none of us have ever had, to run from abusive households, at least we would hope. But everyone has had an adventure of some sort. Everyone has had a time where they disagree with their parent. Everyone has been young. Everyone has made a mistake. Everyone has felt oppression in some form or fashion, that they've been stifled or told what to do that they disagreed with. We may not have had a runaway slave as a friend, but we may have had a friend who was dealing with some struggle or some adversity. We may have had a friend who was dealing with, bullying issues and things like that. Or maybe we may have been bullied ourselves, or maybe even as ourselves, we may have been bullies. So looking at all these pieces of the puzzle then, when I'm talking about Huckleberry Finn, I am, in some senses, talking about Mark Twain's book. But I'm also tapping into all those rich story elements that exist in the human mind. Everyone's understanding the same thing. If you've never been to Mississippi, I'm sure you've been somewhere that's been hot in the summer. Maybe you've never been on the Mississippi River, but I'm sure you've had experiences by the water. At least I hope so. Whether it's an ocean or a lake or a river, or even just simply time in the woods. The fact that we have all those existing schemas in our head, that's why when people watch movies, right? They see how a movie plays out, and they're like, oh, that was good, but it wasn't the way I drew it in my head. That wasn't the way I envisioned those characters in my head. Story has the power to really transport us and to empower us to make all these creations, connections in our brains. And I want to use this as a simple example of it. Like, how story makes these most simple, uninteresting thing totally immersive and really experiential. And to do it, I'm going to go back to maybe one of the first games most of us have ever played, in the form of Candyland. If you've played Candyland, and I sure hope you have, Candyland is a game where you shuffle up a bunch of color-coded cards that either have one square or two squares on them, and that color-coded card tells you what colored square to move your little gingerbread man piece. The ultimate goal is to make your way through this winding maze of these brightly colored squares, to make your way through the end of Candyland so you can be the first person to visit King Candy. Now, to peel back the layers and spoil the pixie dust for you, this is basic mathematics. It's a matching puzzle, and it's a way to teach kids very early how to take turns and well, you hear my turn signal in the background, how to take turns and how to match colors. So if you draw the blue card, for example, you move to the blue square. If you draw the pink card, you move to the next available pink square. You draw the two orange squares card, you move not one orange square forward, but two orange squares forward. And you kind of get the idea of that. And the fun part about this game, which is wild, is because it's designed to be for the youngest of learners. We're talking like 4, 5, 6-year-old kids. This game actually plays itself. You, as the adult, shuffle up the cards and put them in a pile. And then students go back and forth, or players go back and forth, drawing cards from the pile. But there's no skill involved with this. It's really just draw the next card in the sequence and follow the instructions on that card. There's no real luck, there's no real chance, there's no real strategy. It's simply following directions. Draw the blue card, move to the blue space. Draw the pink card, move to the pink space. Draw the yellow card, move to the yellow space. You would think that that would be very quickly the type of thing that children get bored with. A short attention spans go. Simply matching colors after age 4 or 5 loses a little bit of its sizzle, its appeal. But what the game does brilliantly is it has this meta-narrative, this story that pulls us into it, where suddenly, even if you're like an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old, it's kind of cool to play with your younger brother and sister through Candyland, because there's a story that you are this gingerbread boy or gingerbread girl making your way through this land of candy and meeting all these colorful characters that live in that world. So each of these colorful squares are ultimately leading to like 8 or 10 different, I guess, houses or maybe castles or regions, worlds within this Candyland board game. So if you land on like the pink square, for example, there's a pink icon that looks like a peppermint, and you find yourself in like the peppermint lane or the peppermint forest. If you land on the tannish brown square, you find yourself at the home of Grandma Nut, this old looking lady who lives in a gingerbread house, or peanut brittle house, right? Who then you think in your head about, now you're thinking about peanut brittle, maybe your mouth starts to water, right? The idea that you're getting candy from an old lady, which I realize is actually teaching kids maybe some bad stuff in the background too, taking candy from strangers. But she's seen like this beloved old woman, and it's designed to be like enticing and inviting. Meanwhile, you have the menacing-looking Lord Licorice, who's like this red and black colors, very menacing colors, and he has this dark castle sort of in the far corners of the board. And so if you find yourself stuck at the realm of Lord Licorice until you draw the right colored card to get out of there, you feel like you're trapped. You feel like a sense of peril. And it's stupid, and I'm sort of making light of it, but like you're just picking colors out of a deck. But suddenly, kids start to really care about this. Like, they feel a vested sense of ownership because the story has pulled them in. Some years ago, the character in the light blue square was called Queen Frostine. It has a nice rhymey sound to it. They found in the board game that children, younger children, particularly in the wake of like the renaissance of great Disney movies, children don't seem to connect with queens as much. They view queens as older, but they are really connecting with princesses. Think about like Frozen or, Beauty and the Beast or Aladdin or Little Mermaid. And so they changed the Queen Frostine's name, which was wonderfully rhymey, to Princess Frostine. And now suddenly board game sales have improved. Not crazy or silly, right? But the idea that there's a story there. People like to feel like they can connect to these things. And what's super cool about stories is that our brain strings together from the story that we're hearing every other story that we've ever heard that deals with that thing. So even though you're playing as Princess Frostine or landing on that square, you're thinking about Anna and Elsa in Arendelle, or you're thinking about Belle in the far-off Beast's Castle. And so your brain, almost like a hologram, the single item or molecule of the DNA of that story actually contains in it the DNA of every other story you've ever possibly heard. And there's no way of knowing how many things you tap into just by pulling that little storified element in. It's a silly thing, it's a small thing, but it works. Monopoly works the same way, that when you take the idea of moving around a board and losing money as a game, it does not sound particularly joyous, but you come to see yourself as a tycoon, as an investor, as a builder. And so you pick a little token that is yours, your avatar, your representation of yourself to pull you into the game. And you sort of buy or sell houses, not as you, but as the guy with the top hat, right? Or as the guy with the dog, or as the guy with the wheelbarrow. And what's super, I guess, enlightening or, eye-opening about this is, if you've ever played a board game and someone takes your preferred token, it really pulls you out of the game. like, oh no, you can't take the hat. I'm always the hat. Like, you see yourself as the Monopoly guy who wears the hat. And so if somebody else is hat guy, now you have to be this silly dog. And it drives you nuts because it feels like the story itself has been sort of shaken. And I think this is important to think about as teachers, because as we make our way through our content area, whatever your content is, how are we using the same sense of story to draw people in? Like I said, if you're talking about American literature or world history or, you know, biblical traditions, certainly there are stories that we tap into to help propel our classes forward. But what is the story of your classroom? How do you use stories to help, I guess, entice people in to be like that Grandma Nut character who they can't wait to come back to see? And it seems like it's a small thing, but it really does help to activate all these learning centers in the brain, and then driving our students to be more fully immersed and more fully engaged in the learning we're trying to present. It's a challenge for sure, and I'm not saying to sit there and tell them lectures of stories from things that they don't care about. I'm trying to figure out ways that we can craft our own narratives, our own powerful stories to pull people in and ultimately have a more engaged and more productive classroom. So that's it for today. Thank you for listening to these stories. I'd love to hear your stories. Feel free to tweet at me. I'm @meehanedu on Twitter, and I'll be back next week.